Hello, sir.
Hello, Bradley. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
Wonderful. This is so cool to talk to you, man.
Oh, it's cool to talk to you too. You're a bit of a celebrity.
Hey, what are you talking about? Yeah, I was looking at your stuff, getting in all this stuff, man. I was just rewatching the Finn movie because I've never seen it bigger than like 320 by 180 or whatever it came out at first, you know?
Old school.
That's right, man.
320-240 was breaking the internet back then,
I know. I think I had to walk away and get a coffee and come back and then watch it over and over. I finally got smart enough to just start downloading all your stuff and MK12 and all that, just so I had a folder full of it when it was just QuickTimes, you know.
Oh shit.
Well, is how's how do I sound? Is am I too loud at all? I'm
Ah, you
peaking.
sound great, man. You sound like a friendly dude from the Midwest.
they have classes over here for that. They just teach us how to be goofy.
That's right.
Well, anything we should get out of the way or talk about or not talk about before I try to interview you and talk about all this stuff or any notes?
No, I don't think I think we're all good, man. I don't,
Let's
I
do
think
it.
yeah, there's nothing that I'm working on or anything that's super classified or anything, so I think we're all chill.
Awesome, man. Well, I guess let's just get right into it. Thanks for stopping by today and doing an interview. I've been checking out your stuff forever. I was just rewatching the Finn movie. I think that might have been the first thing I watched of yours. What year was that? That was what, 2000, 2001 or two?
Yeah.
That was a while back.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
So it was right when I started getting into all this stuff, all the motion graphic stuff, and there just wasn't a lot of QuickTimes online. And I remember finding your site and just devouring everything on it. And I guess the first question is like, what got you into all this stuff? Was there something you originally watched or thought about that got you start playing around with all these tools and making cool stuff like that?
I went to school back when like the internet was kind of just becoming a thing. I went to school from 1994, 1995 to year 2000. So it was just when the internet was like becoming a thing and Flash was like the thing that was blowing people's minds, because all of a sudden things started moving and pulsing to music, and that was kind of it was a timing thing, really. And so I felt really lucky to kind of catch that wave of all the new shit. I'm kind of looking at this VR explosion right now and thinking the same thing. That it's just kind of that new thing, and everyone's kind of jumping into it, and that's kind of how it was back then with Flash and motion graphics on the web. Even though it was the exact same thing people were doing for broadcast, it was just 320 by 240, or skip intros and all that shit. But people were crazy about it for some reason. And I think my biggest influences starting out were Chris Cunningham and Attic and Designers Republic were my three kind of big pillars of inspiration. The maximalist approach of like Designers Republic and Attic mixed with like Chris Cunningham's editorial style and his kind of dark vibes kind of was the magic formula for the things that I was doing. I wanted really glitchy, but really, layered design, tons of type everywhere. I'm not allowed to say that I was, inspired by Too Advanced because of
Is
all the
that
like
not cool anymore?
just because all the comparisons from back in the day, of me and Eric Joyner, Eric Jordan, whom it's funny now, like, he's moved to New Zealand with his family and is like, some of his references that he posts on Pinterest and the things that he talks about make me think that he's really big into psychedelics now, which I love. So,
You guys might have to have a meetup then.
that's what I'm thinking, dude. Me and Eric Joyner have become like space brothers.
Oh gosh, I just you saying that site makes me remember just refreshing that page as well and waiting for it to load forever.
Yeah, dude, it's just so funny. And I was really lucky and worked with some, I went to school in Humboldt State, in Humboldt County, and was probably one of the worst design schools on earth, you know, like not a design school at all. It was a total hippie school, you know, where everybody was taking mushrooms and weed all day and, you know, smoking with the teachers. It was just like this big, like, smoke out. And I was in the film and art program, and it wasn't really until I got my first job out of school at a company called Virtual, which was such a lucky break to even be included in that company. And that's where I kind of learned all about design from, honestly, some of the best designers in the world at the time.
What gave you a leg into that to that first job there? I think a lot of people learning the stuff and playing and they're always interested in like that leap.
Break, yeah.
Yeah, that leap. And you say you like you kind of didn't have a good design education. You know, what got you in the door there?
I think, you know, a lot of hard work on my own, just learning and making and you know, sleeping in computer labs and just kind of being a freak about it at school, you know, gave way to a lot of work that I would make, just all really personal work, because, you know, the school will give you an assignment, and then I would blow through the assignment in like, you know, half an hour, and then I'd be like, all right, now what, you know, and then I would kind of make up my own projects, and you know, so I always was doing personal work in Flash and in After Effects. Those are like my two, you know, Flash, After Effects, and Photoshop were like my three things. I didn't really even use Illustrator back then. Not really, you know, it was mostly making shit in Flash and Photoshop, and then animating it in After Effects and, you know, editing in Premiere. But yeah, I entered this New Media and Vision Awards, which was in 1999. And it was a thing in San Francisco. It was just like a contest. And I entered this Flash piece called July 18. That was this really weird, like Nine Inch Nails inspired Flash piece that was about a puppy serial killer. So it was like a dude who'd break into people's houses and kill their dogs or kill their puppies. It was super weird, man. It was just the weirdest thing. And somehow, I mean, you know, I won best of show in the web category. And I was just out of school, and at the actual awards ceremony, the two creative directors of Virtual were there somehow recruiting. And it was just like the luckiest break I could ever. It was just so lucky. It was just so incredibly lucky that they were there and I happened to win and I met them. And they're like, you know, your work's really fucking weird. We need someone like you. Although your design's not all that great, you know. They kind of said that, you know, your design's kind of like formulaic, looks like the attic. You know, it's just kind of like, all right.
You're like, oh, that's like, good. I've been staring at that stuff.
Exactly. And they're like, but your mixture of sound and motion and interactivity and just like all the other things that make up your Flash movies are really interesting, and we could use you on the team. And so I went to Rockville, Maryland to work with them for a couple months, and then got shipped off to London because I'm a Canadian citizen. I'm dual citizen. So I was able to get a visa to go work in London, and, you know, this, just that experience over that next year and a half was just, you know, I think for all of us in that company was just a really special, really special time. That it's funny, Mike Young, one of the other guys, I'm sure you know who Mike Young is, just posted a bunch of shit on his Facebook of like all of us in the year 2000, when we're all like 25 years old and, you know, punk kids on the streets of New York and in London, just like with our cameras and, you know, me with my video camera. And it's just so funny, man. It's just so funny. So yeah, that's how I kind of got in. And then from there, you know, we all got laid off because the dot-com bubble burst, and the company like kind of, it was Virtual was sponsored by a gaming company called ZeniMax Media. And so it was just like funded. We were just like making web experiments in Flash pretty much the entire time, and like just pushing design. We were kind of like the internet's attic. You know, all of us were like inspired by the same shit. We were all doing the same style. You know that style back in the day, like super layered and like, you know, weird shape, weird like graphic shapes mixed with like 3D explosions and, you know.
When 3D could only render a few seconds, so you kind of had to limit it.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was just, you know, man, a lot of the breaks in my career I call lucky. You know, even getting the Tron gig was kind of lucky. You know, like Joe, the director was really liked Mandingo, which was like the big dancing black dude on my website. And
I thought that was you for so many years. I'm like, how does that guy have so much time to get so like muscly and make all these motion graphics? How is this possible?
Yeah. And so, I'm sitting on a panel with Joe at like, you know, an FITC conference in Toronto. And, you know, it was like me, Joe Kaczynski, Angus Neal from the Mill, and then some other Robert Lindstrom from North Kingdom. We're all on a panel, and I'm sitting next to Joe, and he just like leans over and he's like, "I really love your motion graphics work. I really love Mandingo. It's like it's like one of my favorite things on the internet." And I'm just like, "Oh, thanks, dude." You know, and he's like, "We should meet sometime. I have something big going on," and so I go in and he shows me that he's doing this Hummer commercial. And so he brings me in to do like all this like interface work on this Hummer commercial. And then from there, you know, got to do Tron, which is like the biggest break. And, you know, from there I learned, you know, I worked with David Lewandowski and Jake, who are, you know, younger than me and kind of more hip on, you know, the current state of affairs on the internet. And they kind of taught me about, you know, self-promotion and, you know, cause I would just make these flash websites and just throw shit up online. And it was great self-promotion, but it was never like a real website, you know, and they kind of taught me, you know, the importance of HTML5, that Flash is dead, you know, HTML5, get on a templated web service. And so once Tron wrapped, you know, I kind of merged that Tron wrapping with a big website release and got kind of, it was like a second wave in my career because I was feeling a little lost for a while, you know, just kind of making good money in LA and partying all the time and not really doing personal work at all, you know, just kind of, you know, punching the clock, doing the freelance work at like Motion Theory and then just like signing off, you know?
So did you have like, it sounded like you had a conscious thought to do less client work for a bit. Is that kind of what happened? It's just like you didn't get to do as much personal work and decided to jump back into it?
Yeah, I was just from like maybe 2005. From like 2005 to about 2009, I just felt kind of lost. You know, I was just only doing work at all the studios in LA, which is, you know, still really inspiring work. I went staff at Buck for a while. I went staff at Prologue for a while, you know, working at all the best places. But it just didn't do my personal stuff as much. And I feel like that is, you know, all my best work now, I feel is mostly the personal stuff. And that's kind of what, you know, I think it's the most inspiring to build your own brand, you know, at least to have that brand. And that's, if the work runs through that, I think it's much more inspiring, at least for me, you know? So, I just felt like I had lost touch with that for a while, but, I feel much more connected to that now. And I'm much more inspired now than I've ever been. Like I was having dinner with my stepmom last night and we were talking about it, and it's just, I found a formula of, you know, a mixture of learning new things, you know, like I think ever since I worked at Bot and Dolly, which was the robotics company in San Francisco, and just being introduced to designing for physical space and, you know, that world really inspired me, and some of the people that I collaborate with in San Francisco and pushing, you know, more of like the practical approach and, you know, building things and filming things. That and working with the robotics, the projection, and you know, all the people in that world, mixed with like the photography and wanting to learn more about 3D and render engines. I just think there's a lot of different things for me to play in, and nothing feels repetitive anymore. Like I'm barely doing any sort of techie UI work that, you know, was the signature of my work for so long. I'm pretty much doing everything else.
I only ask more because I think some people kind of like the group of people that want to know that first jump. I talk to a lot of artists and they also hit this kind of wall or this like, like they're doing their work, they're making good stuff, but they, I think you described it well as just being lost. So it sounds like the personal work not only like got you into other things like robotics and all that stuff, but did that also inform your kind of more client work as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think how it works in this industry is you'll do something on your own, That's a personal experiment, and then a client will see that and say, "Hey, you know, we want you to do that for this." So, for instance, a perfect sequence, and I speak about this in my talks at conferences, is that, you know, me and my friend Michael Fullman did the FITC triangle, the LED triangle. And as simple as that was three LED panels that we rented for under $1,000. Shot it with a couple of friends that owned, you know, an Alexa and a Nikon D900 or whatever. You know, shot that thing for, made the whole thing for under $1,000. Just, you know, in the theater department room at Loyola Marymount, just, you know, just for fun. That got seen by, you know, Sony, by Apple, who then kind of, you know, not to say that we were doing anything that had never been done before, but, you know, Sony at E3 kind of blatantly did the same thing. Apple at one of their things kind of blatantly did the same thing, putting people through, you know, an LED tunnel, you know, and filming it. Same color, same everything. And then from there, and of course never got asked by either of them to do the work, but whatever. And then, you know, Adobe saw that. Said, hey, do you want to do a logo remix and kind of that style? Did that, which then Microsoft and Samsung saw, hired me for both of those projects, one being the Windows logo, which, you know, is probably going to be the most visible work I'll ever do. You know,
like, yeah, pixel to pixel, probably the most displayed,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And so you know, that was one of those projects that had no idea what it was going to be. Just thought, you know, when they approached me that it was going to be like 1 in 20 desktop images that shipped with the operating system, but had no idea that it was going to be like the image that's on every single laptop and every single ad you ever see. But it all stemmed from this like tiny little personal project. And I think that, I think that's so important. Like, for instance, right now I'm, you know, doing a music video that although it's been a really stressful process getting us up and running to the shoot, it's been, I think in my head, I know that there's a couple images in this video that are going to be great to get me more work like that from clients, you know, and so that's why I'm doing it. It's like, A, it's really fun, but B, I invest so much of my energy into making something that's really, you know, unique, or, you know, has tons of, you know, originality to it. And I think that is going to be seen by the right people. Hopefully, you know, could completely not work, but I'm kind of banking on that kind of thing for, you know, the Microsoft theory that happened with the Windows project from the FITC. So I guess, you know, and in less than a month, I'm releasing a new print series. That's just me making all sorts of renders at night on my own. And, you know, it's probably going to be about 25 pieces of artwork that I'm going to release. And I'm hoping that, you know, Wired and Nike and some other people approach me to do that kind of work. Because I feel like, and I've heard this said so many times at conferences, but, you know, people will say, hey, you know, you do the work that you want to do on the personal side, and it'll resonate with clients who will then pay you to do that kind of work that you want to do. They also say that don't put work on your website that you don't like, or else clients are going to look at that and say, hey, can you do that kind of work? So it kind of goes both ways. You know, if you are unhappy about the work you're doing, take it upon yourself to do the work you want to do. And then hopefully that will, and if you do it with enough passion and dedication and, you know, put the time in, hopefully that kind of work will win you work in the future that you want to do. So
yeah, it sounds like you've been doing that ever since the start, right? Your teacher was like, hey, go do this, and you were like, well, okay, did it, now let me go do something for myself. Yep. And that spawned the next thing, and it sounds like you're in a you can kind of trust the process at this point and go, all right, I'm gonna go do something crazy. I mean, can you think of an example from the past of things you really, really worked hard on and put out into the world and didn't get that response back? Like, is it a one-to-one kind of ratio, or do you just kind of have to keep putting stuff out until something clicks?
Yeah, I mean, there have been projects that I've put a lot of energy into that haven't, I mean, I feel like everything, has a return in a way, because, in the grand scheme of, people consuming your body of work, they'll see things here and there. But yeah, there's some projects, and I think the lesson, early last year, I did a music video for Tycho, and had expectations on what that would bring, put a lot of energy, and it was still one of my favorite projects to date. Just, a group of like 9 people going camping in Big Basin State Forest for 4 days, in the rain. It was just a thrill, it was just a complete thrill just to, wake up every morning in the rain, running out with 2 different cameras, shooting full spectrum, psychedelic imagery in these beautiful environments. And, it was so fun, but, not sure that, the PRIDS work, the chamber work, some of the other live action work that I'm doing could have been a result from it. But I think one of the other lessons that I've learned through the years is just, I release things on my website as closure. You finish something and it's kind of, and it's done, and you're closing the chapter on the project and moving on. And so that's why I have so much work on my website, because I want to just kind of see the history of all the things that I've done and kind of force myself to look at the grid and kind of continue to reinvent the things I do. But also it's like my archive. It's like my library. Like once a project's up on the website, it's done, it's done forever. And this is the only place that it exists, and I just move on. And now I release work with no expectations whatsoever. I just release it to the world and move on to the next one, and just move on to the next one. And it's a constant conveyor belt. I don't dwell on anything anymore. I just kind of finish it and move on, and finish it and move on. And that's been a really healthy process for me, actually, is just to not really get too wrapped up in how things are received anymore. Although it's impossible, with Twitter nowadays and like the notifications tab, it's impossible to not look at that and to see, who's retweeting your tweet when you release something, of course, because, I'm only human. But, I am definitely, when something is up on the website, it is time to move on. And it is so far in the rearview mirror after like an hour of posting that I just am on to the next thing, planning the next thing. And that's been a really good way for me to stay productive, is to just keep on hammering it. I have a list. I have a text document that I just have like all the projects that I'm doing, what's coming up next. And it's just like this nonstop thing. And, I don't know when I'll slow down or when, I'm constantly doing, 2 to 3 things at the same time. And, I take a lot of inspiration from Ash in that I think he is the most dedicated person I've ever seen in this industry. And he's just so into so many things. And for me, I have this like weird, I'm not really a competitive person by nature, but I force myself to think that I'm competitive to run with these people that are highly productive. And so I, with people like Beeple and like Ash and like, my friend Connor, and I'm constantly Michael Wrigley, and, I'm constantly Connor Grable. I'm constantly like texting with these people and sharing images with these people and just constantly getting inspiration from them and shooting inspiration to them. And it's kind of like this friendly competitive thing where we're all like breakdancers showing each other our new moves. And that inspires us to like keep on training and learning new moves so we can continue to show each other. And so I find running mates, I'm learning photography right now, and for instance, I'm going out shooting on Wednesday night with my friend Alex, who's an incredibly talented photographer. And we're going to go out shooting because I want to run with him, and I want to run with my friend Sebastian, and I want to run with all these, artists and directors. And it's kind of like your remote graffiti crew in a way. And that for me is a way to stay inspired too, because, when you work, I work in my basement, I learn a ton from my roommate, Phil Ranieri, who's incredibly talented and intelligent and is into so many different things as well. And, but it's just me and Phil in our basement. And, it's not like working at Buck where you have like, 30 of like the best designers in the world or at Virtual. So I use the power of, you know, texting. You know, my iMessage is like, 40 gigs,
All the images you shared.
All the images that I share. But it's really important to me to just continue to run with these people. Most of them younger than me. I'm turning 40 this year, you know. And Michael Chyna is one of my running mates. You know, he's my age. And Joshua Davis is another guy I take a lot of inspiration from. And these guys are my age. These are like that old school, you know, those old school early 2000s flash generation. Obviously Josh Davis was like the man, you know? So I try to run with as many people as I can just to constantly share and obviously the internet provides, you know, a ton of inspiration, but when you actually interact with them, it becomes like this personal thing, that's a lot richer in its interactions. So it's all psychological because I'm actually not competitive, but I do it to just push myself, if that makes sense.
No, totally. It sounds like, you're always kind of looking at your site and making sure it's not the same thing four times in a row, right? You're like always like pushing it. Even looking at your early stuff, you know, it's a lot of editing and a lot of layering and a lot of like, it was really film based. Like but you also had this really big connection to music, it felt like, early on. The way that you edited to music and the way like all the little details timed up so perfectly. And then it seems like you expanded that with film and direction and all this stuff. So like, I guess it makes me think, like, what are you into now that you haven't used or played with? You mentioned virtual reality kind of stuff. Is there something on the list that you're like, I want to go play with that? Like what Wikipedia page do you have open the most recently, you know?
Well, the Wikipedia page is usually I'll look up drugs on Wikipedia. I think probably one of the best moves I ever made in my career was moving up to San Francisco. Because LA is kind of like the directing, motion graphics design scene. There's not a ton of experience, or at least when I was there, you know, I left beginning of 2013. The experiential, interactive, tech infused design work is all up here, and the people that I fell into working with, you know, guys like Tariq Abdul Gawad and Philip Ranieri and Connor Grable and Joe Picard and, you know, all these guys that were doing, you know, projection mapping and experiential design, robotics, practical, you know, building things and filming it and everything's practical and physical, you know, working with these guys just basically reinvented my whole repertoire. Like, I came from motion graphics and mostly just motion graphics and graphic design. And you know, through the exposure to these kinds of guys in Autofuss and Bot and Dolly, just learned a whole new set of skills, you know, designing for a completely different application. I'm a graphic designer by foundation. You know, that's not going anywhere. But I just think that, virtual reality and you know, practical light installations, kinetic sculptures, practical builds, now photography. It's just, I think it's so important as an artist, especially an older designer, where you kind of have seen everything and you're kind of like, you know, it's only natural to lose enthusiasm as you get older. You know, I feel like there's so many people that I know that, you know, once they hit 32, they're just kind of like, what's the point? You know, I want to go, you know, start a family, you know, or you know, like, I want to get something safe and comfortable and start a family and check out, you know, and I have a lot of friends that do that. They just kind of get comfortable. And for me, I'm always striving to make myself uncomfortable, where I'm, you know, throwing myself into new mediums that I know nothing about, only to force myself to learn as much as possible to survive, you know, to basically stay afloat. And so, you know, Box was a perfect example where, you know, here's a guy who does graphic design and motion graphics thrown into this really high-end projection mapping project and say, okay, run this thing, you know, design it, go get it, you know, make this thing cool. And it's just like, okay, I have no idea what's going on, but you know, just through collaboration was able to learn so much on that project. That and, you know, Box and Tron were the two just most influential projects in my career, because I learned so much. You know, Tron was all about, you know, motion graphics getting thrown into a visual effects company and getting pounded by the visual effects supervisor for a year about how VFX pipelines work and how to, you know, how the things we were doing wouldn't work in a VFX pipeline, and getting yelled at all the time. And, you know, it was really intense training, but at the end of the day, we made work that we were all very proud of.
What's an example of that? I think a lot of people in doing like traditional motion graphics are looking into visual effects and how it's popping up more and more that motion graphics is being tied into visual effects. A lot of it's being combined kind of together. Look at like man versus machine, that kind of stuff. And so what's one of those examples where you take a motion graphics person that's used to working with one or two people and throw them into a visual effects pipeline? And like, what is just not possible at that point? Like, what do you have to really keep in mind?
Well, I think a great example of the results of that is Mr. Lewandowski. You know, here's a guy who had a motion graphics upbringing, gets thrown into Tron, and then you see his work that he's doing after Tron is just, you know, he learned V-Ray for Cinema 4D at Digital Domain for the job, comes out of there and is basically just like doing, you know, really refined VFX work on his music videos that he did all the work on, the Flying Lotus music video, Tiny Tortures, and the Friendly Fires music video, then obviously his two shorts. So I think, you know, when you're exposed to, you know, real pipelines, you know, real VFX pipelines, and understanding how shots are broken out and the compositing, you know, for me, the biggest learning experience was just working with the compositors, you know, and going from, you know, because we used like an Open Frameworks programmer on Tron that couldn't render any sort of depth of field or motion blur, and you know, and had to like port all those to Houdini, and you know, just looking, you know, working with the compositors and seeing how they, you know, it's one thing to do, you know, After Effects compositing. It's another thing to work with a Nuke compositor, you know, taking, you know, 20 different passes out of a V-Ray, you know, Digital Domain pipeline render, and watching how they use the passes and all the different effects they would put on it. And, you know, the making it look, you know, the thing I learned from Tron was just everything needs to look like it was shot with the camera. So everything has lens distortion and chromatic aberration and depth of field, and apertures become really, you know, f-stops become really important. And, you know, the lens, and, you know, it's all shot from a camera, which was great, you know, changed the way that I would design after that experience. You know, and now I think the tools are getting so refined, you know, you and, you know, Grayscale Gorilla and Video Copilot are throwing together great tutorials. And if you just look at like what you taught 4 years ago to what you're doing now, you know, the bar is so much higher. The quality of the tools is increasing. And so I feel like you can do so much more. And so I feel like that's why motion graphics is merging with VFX, because it's all kind of merging together, where you're doing much more high-end things in motion graphics now. And then the cool thing now is like, you look at a studio like Buck, who is doing cell animation mostly now. It's like really high-end, it's like design-driven like cell animation, but it's like so high-end where you can't tell what's 3D and what's not anymore. Like if you look at something like Good Books, you know, and which to me is like my favorite piece ever done ever. The Good Books that Buck did, I think, a couple of years ago. And you look at that, you can't tell what's 3D and what's not. You know, you just can't. You don't really know what's going on, but all you know is it's amazing. You know, and it's all like, and there's a lot of 3D in Good Books. You know, but you just can't tell. And now I feel like it's getting so good, the tools are getting so good, that now studios are kind of just making sure you don't know what it is anymore. Man versus Machine is a perfect example, where you'll look at things and it looks photoreal, you know, like those Channel 5 idents, and you look at that and you're like, you can't tell what's CG and what's not, but you know it's something's up because it's a surrealist image, you know, and you're just kind of like, how, you know, is that shot? Is that all CG? Like, what is it? And I think that that's why it's so exciting.
There is something happening right now, I feel, in the last few years that I don't know. It can't be like crazy faster computers or anything, because it just that just hasn't happened. But something else, like either the design sense of people or the idea that we're going to combine a bunch of tools now instead of just rely on like one workflow. Like, okay, we have Cinema 4D and After Effects and everything's going through here. It feels like everyone's learning everything, and it's really it's allowing you to look at a piece and not know how it's made and not know this, like, how the sausage is made, and just enjoy it more almost. It's really interesting. And
even, how'd you make that sausage?
Yeah. Well, okay. So you've brought it up a couple times that, and every time I listen to one of your interviews, I have to ask, and this may not work at all, but I still am so interested in the idea on how you kind of approach drugs. Okay, so you've been open to it, and it's not a thing like on a regular podcast I would bring up, but you seem to talk about it. And I guess what I would like, from just being from like Michigan, right, you got some weed around here in Chicago a little bit, but you take it to a level where I am so, it's so interesting to hear you talk about it, because it's not drugs, man. It's not like a drug culture thing. It's something so much more than that, to you. And I guess I'm asking, like, can you sit me down and explain it? Right? Like, what would you say as a dummy about it?
Well, I think there's, I feel like there's a difference between drugs and psychedelics. And so I think that, you know, you can do, there's a lot of chemicals out there, like, you know, like cocaine, I think is, although it's really fun and really cosmopolitan, and it's kind of a, almost like a status thing that you do. It's very harmful for your heart, and very hard, and it can be addictive, and you know, it's its own thing. I think, you know, things like meth and heroin, you know, and opiates and pharmaceuticals and all that stuff is just, you know, to me is just kind of garbage and horrible for you and incredibly addictive. And so, like, those, I, you know, all of those that I just mentioned, I throw into like the drug bin. And, you know, I try to, you know, I try to stay away from all of those as much as possible. Sometimes I like to party, and, you know, we'll get into the cosmopolitan things a little bit, but I'm quitting that on my 40th birthday. But so that's all in the drug bin. But I think that psychedelics, and none of those are going to do anything for you creatively either. It's more just like a, you know, a party thing, and, you know, music and feeling, you know, you feel great and you listen to music and whatever. That's the drug bin. Just throw that away. I think that the more profound substances are, you know, psilocybin, LSD, DMT, ayahuasca. You know, DMT has a bazillion different variants to them, you know, and it has the 5-MeO or whatever the hell, and, you know, all these other, like, little, you know, San Pedro and the peyote, all of these. And ayahuasca in particular is like a really strong, powerful, like shamanistic ritual that you know, people go to Peru to do it, to deal with, you know, deep rooted problems. Actually, people do ayahuasca to deal with drug addiction problems. Wow. So people who are abusing meth or heroin will do ayahuasca to get them off meth or heroin, you know, which is so interesting. You know, and Joe Rogan is a, you know, big proponent of, you know, DMT and ayahuasca and the psychedelic thing, which I think for an artist is an incredibly profound experience. And so, you know, I started using dimethyltryptamine back in 2008, and it just completely changed the way I design things, the way I approach things. It just changed everything for me, because it was such a profound visual experience that my quest was to then recreate what I was seeing and who I was interacting with. And just it was just so strong, but it always felt very digital. And it wasn't until the ayahuasca ceremonies that it was like, okay, wait a minute, there's so much more than that. There's like a whole other plane. It actually makes you believe in, you know, spirits and you know, frequencies that we can't see, you know, wave, like a lot of people talk about vibrations and you know, there's a whole other world out there that we can't see, that I think is really profound. So I think there's a big difference between drugs and psychedelics. And well, already, you know, there's so much research done on the healing powers of psychedelics, including psilocybin, including LSD, that, you know, I don't know. It's a very, you know, I think you need to be a pretty strong-minded person to handle them. A lot of people are really scared, but I just look at it as like, there's nothing really to be scared about because it's basically just your own brain. Like, why would you be scared of your own brain? Now, mind you, a lot of people say that that's a really ignorant question to ask because a lot of people are scared of their own brain. You know, but for someone like me, I think that I just want to be as in touch with the deepest realms of my creativity as much as I can. And so that's why I use and enjoy the psychedelics.
Yeah, it already makes more sense to me, just like the way that you describe that it's a different, it's not drugs, it's psychedelics. So that yeah, automatically makes more sense. For me, it's I hear stories about it, especially from you and some other artists that describe how it changed the way they even see things, not just design wise, but in their life, yeah, like, you know, Steve Jobs stories, kind of stuff like that, and mm-hmm. It makes me like I'm interested in that. I'm always interested when somebody else has a different point of view or a different way of seeing something. You can like try to talk it out and talk it out, but if there's actually an experience that can help you change the way you think, or even just give you an idea on how other people can see things, I think it's just interesting to me, and I've always wanted to ask you about that because I think people should experience as many things as possible. Safely, yeah, right?
Safely, and I think that, you know, when I was in college, in Humboldt County, you know, psilocybin grew in the, you know, people would just grow that stuff everywhere, and so it was just so at a, you know, a very impressionable age, I was introduced to the powers of psilocybin quite frequently. And then kind of lost touch with it and was, you know, I was incredibly creative in college and always making things and, was one of the most inspired times of my life. And, you know, during that period of being kind of lost, you know, in the mid 2000s where I was kind of, you know, just kind of partying in Los Angeles and, you know, running around all the studios and, you know, still doing great work. It was just, I wasn't in touch with myself. Was also kind of more into the drug scene than I was the psychedelic scene. And it only was, you know, since 2008 kind of flipped that. And I don't know if they go together because there's a lot of other variables that are in play, but there's definitely like a correlation between me kind of getting back into the psychedelic thing and my career resurgence and my focus on individuality and really pushing the personal tip much more. I do think that there is a correlation to that. So, yeah, I don't know. And in San Francisco, obviously there's a huge, huge scene cause it's all, you know, the Burning Man culture up here and you know, the creativity that you see at Burning Man is just so, it's just so inspiring. And it's mostly just to see, it's mostly just humanity being awesome. It's not necessarily like, oh, that's really inspiring motion graphics work or design work, because the design is actually, it's not about like design as much as it is about just people being awesome. And that is a big, it doesn't super like one-to-one translate into the work I do, but it just makes me happier. You know, I love weirdos. I love freaks. I love people who express their creativity in really fun, interesting ways. And that's something that I always find really rewarding about going to Burning Man. Is you'll see a, you know, you see all these things. You're like, that's rad. That's awesome. That's rad. I love mankind. You know, and you know, I always think about I always think about if aliens were like surveying the globe, you know, with a large telescope and just like collecting what humanity is all about, you know, and they're probably just like, oh, we're such polluters and we're such, you know, we kill everything. We're killing dolphins and whales and stuff. But also, you know, hopefully they can tune into, you know, what goes on at Burning Man so they can see, you know, the more awesome side of humanity too. Cause that's, it's a really great thing. And so I don't know.
It's such an intriguing thing to me. Sometimes I attribute it to, just where you live and what your upbringing is and all this stuff. But there seems – it kind of reminds me of something I've been playing around with in my head, and maybe I could ask you about it. It's like the difference between like West Coast and the Midwest and the East Coast as far as like not just design culture but also like work ethic and the way that people even approach their life seems to be – you know, this isn't something new I've come up with, you know, obviously it's been talked about 100 times, but it's specifically with motion graphics and editing and visual effects, there seems to be an entirely different way to approach it, the different ways people got into it and just different ways people think about it in relation to their life. And this kind of, it makes me think about that because you have this way of thinking about your work that I hear about, but have never like physically had myself. So I guess you've worked with a ton more people than I have. Do you see like some sort of obvious difference between different, you know, Midwest or the East Coast or anything like that?
Well, the funny thing about all this is that I was actually born and raised in Minneapolis.
Oh, wow.
And to Canadian parents. So, you know, I was the youngest. And so when I was 18 and graduated high school, we all moved to San Francisco. The whole family moved to San Francisco. So I've lived in San Francisco now for 21 years. When I was growing up, you know, in Minneapolis, it was not about design. It was all about role-playing games and, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and all sorts of, you know, all sorts of creativity that way with my older brother making, you know, stop motion claymation films. And it was just like everything but design. And then, you know, moved out to San Francisco, went to Humboldt State, and the rest is, you know, kind of, the rest is, you know, that just was always in California. Lived a couple other cities, you know, lived in New York, lived in Sydney, lived in Seattle, lived in Rockville, Maryland, lived in London, which, you know, was really impressionable too. Living in London was an incredibly inspiring time because that, you know, that city is, London and New York are very, very in tune, especially London, very in tune with design. So being around the people I was at Virtual and then being in that city, I think was kind of a double, you know, just like a double juice, if you will. But yeah, I think, you know, I think now, you know, you look at a guy like Beeple, who I honestly think is, you know, Mike Winkelmann is, I honestly think he's one of the best in the world right now.
He's so amazing. He's so interesting to hear.
So out of control, amazing, and just so self-deprecating and just so... It's almost annoying how self-deprecating he is, and I got the pleasure of hanging, you know, spending some time with him in Toronto in April, and you know, just had such a great time with him. He's such an adorable human being.
He's so great.
He's just an adorable human too. He's just like so cute. And he's, I think, the best in the world. Like honestly, and he is having the most influence on the design and motion graphics industry than any other person on earth right now.
Yeah, I can see
you
that.
Know, him and Ash are kind of just like on just like another, just are so, just their output is just really insane. And Ash is kind of taking the more, you know, doing the school, doing the podcast, doing the bazillion things that he does, and people's just making an incredible image every day on top of all the VJ stuff he does. And it's just really inspiring. But that dude lives in nowhere. He lives in Wisconsin. You know, I think he lives in like some small town in Wisconsin, completely isolated from the world, but he's the best in the world and probably one of the most visible and respected designers in the world. So there's that. And then Ash lives in San Diego, which is like the most bro-y, forgive me, Ash, is the most bro-y, like SoCal bro-y, you know, not much of a design place either. It's all about, you know, the alley, the beach, you know, wearing flip flops and being a bro, you know, and so that's not really a design hub either. And, you know, again, Ash is one of the most outspoken, and take a person like you, and I don't know where Andrew Kramer lives, but, you know, I look at you and Andrew Kramer, it's the same thing. It's like, you guys are doing so much for the industry as individuals and have your thing. So I honestly don't know if it matters anymore. But I do think, like, hubs like London and New York and Los Angeles, I call the big leagues, because once you go there, you realize, okay, you know, this is a really big ocean filled with giant whale sharks, and, you know, I'm just a sweet little dolphin swimming amongst the whale sharks. And it's a humbling, you know, especially in Los Angeles. You know, there's so much talent there. There's so much talent in London. There's so much talent in New York, that, you know, those are the hubs. But, you know, I also think that, yeah, LA is, you know, it's tough. You're always in your car and you're driving all over the place. You know, New York has, you know, really insane winters and really crowded subways, and, you know, it's kind of a grind. And London is kind of the same thing. You know, it's always raining and the tube is always muddy, and, you know, they're all just kind of shitty lifestyles, if you will. LA has a lot of space, so that's good. And, you know, there's a lot of parks and things you can do, but then there's a whole layer of smog over the whole city. So, you know, I think they're all tough. They're real tough and really unforgiving. And but, you know, all the great studios are there. You know, look at, you know, all the best studios are in most of them are in London, New York, or LA for a reason. So, you know, I don't know. A lot of people ask me if they should move to, you know, LA to go to school, and I always am like scared to tell them yes, because, like, I don't want anyone to move to LA and just hate it and be like, the city sucks, you know, like, I hate being stuck in traffic all day while it's 95 degrees and the sun's, like, burning my shoulder. You know, it's like, you know, I don't know. You know, I try to just say, you know, if you have an internet presence, you know, and you have, you know, you're working it on, you know, your Twitters and Facebooks and Behance, you know, people were asking me, like, you know, what's the deal with personal websites? And I'm like, dude, I kind of think the personal website's dead, man. I think it's all about Behance now. And, you know, as sad as that is, and we'll all have personal websites, but, you know, not that many people look at my website. You know, a lot more people look at stuff on Vimeo and Instagram. And, you know, you have to jump into that jet stream of those social media hubs that, you know, Cargo Collective is not really have a huge scene, nor does Squarespace, nor does WordPress, but you throw your stuff on Behance and it's a whole different ball game, you know?
Yeah, sites kind of are going away. Even our site is, you really have to go to where the people are now. It's Facebook, mm-hmm. and Twitter, and, you know, getting your word out isn't just putting it on your website. And, like, I feel like people used to have bookmarks and they'd go to their favorite site and check it every day. Like I probably did I had yours in there, right? And I had MK12 in there, and I had all these sites I would check and see if there's new stuff. But I feel like now I'll hear about it. Like, I'll hear about it, yeah, somewhere else, and then I'll go to your site, you know?
Yeah, that's how it works. And, you know, for me personally, like, I'll always have a site because, like I said, it's my library, it's my archive, and I hate using Behance. Sorry, Adobe. You know, I just find it difficult to use. Mm-hmm. And I just like to, you know, as a designer, I like to be in control of that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I like to, yeah, be in the control of how the work is presented. So,
Well, you just need a new Flash site. We're just going all the way back.
You know, man, when I started the Tron gig, and I was working with David and Jake, and had worked a lot of, like, a long time on this new Flash website, and was just about to release it, and I showed it to them, and they're like, you know that Flash is dead, right? And I'm just like, what do you mean? And they're like, nobody uses Flash. This is back in, like, 2010. And they're like, nobody uses Flash anymore. And I'm just like, oh, God. And I got all mad, you know, I was all pissed off. And I was like, dude, you guys are wrong. Flash is amazing, you know, blah, blah, blah. And here we are. And, you know, they're completely, completely correct. Nothing I could say about that. So I had to, like, basically go to, you know, signed up for Cargo through, you know, 100 of my projects on Cargo, launched both of the sites at the same time. Took me another year to get that shit together. And now I'm, like, beholden to Cargo because I have 100 projects on there. And it's, you know, like I said, it's my library. It's, it's why you're able to watch the Finn movie. You know, it's like I want all that stuff up there because it's like, you know, when I'm all said and done at, you know, I'll probably retire at like 75, you know, when I can't, you know, by then it'll all be like gesture, like brain recognition, and we'll still be able to work even though we can't use a mouse because I have arthritis or something. You know, when it's all said and done, gmonk.com is still going to have work back in 2001 because I just like that. I like looking at the first project I ever posted, which was this cartoon called She Dumped Me for a Roofer. And I just like to see, you know, my reps are like, don't show any of that work. Like, you need to just show only your best work. You're only as good as your weakest project. And I'm like, nah, dude, I'm, you know, I've been doing this 15 years and I want to like see that, you know? And so like they, you know, you're only as good as your weakest project is I feel like a fact, but I totally don't listen to it. You know, like I totally ignore it. So,
well, I think it's good that you leave it up there because there's so many, even if you're not 100% happy with that project, there's so many people that love to see something that you put out first and go like, okay, well, it was like a flash animation, right? It's like it's kind of hand drawn and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like so for somebody to look at that and I think you like did some voices and stuff on it, and then and then for people to look at that and then look at, you know, Tron or any of your new pieces and see that leap is possible, that path is there. I think it's so inspiring that you leave that up. Actually, mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah, I you know. Yeah, I like to. And the other thing is like every, you know, people say this all the time. Every project has a story. You know, like every project that I look at, I remember exactly where I was making it, who I was making it with, where I was. Do you know what I mean? And it brings back memories. It's like you know, for instance, I'm looking at my site right now as I'm talking to you because you just brought up the roofer. You know, I'm looking at the effects over there piece done in May 2005. I know exactly who I was working with. I was at Transistor Studios. Working with Jared, Anders was in town. One of my best friends from Denmark was in town. We were working on this together. I remember who I learned how to do the cloth kind of from was this guy named Chandler who showed me that. So it's just like everything has a memory, you know, like, and that's it, you know, as kind of a guy who's been doing this for 15 years, it's like that those memories make me happy. You know, those memories bring a smile to my face where I remember, you know, being at Transistor Studios in Venice Beach, working with Anders and Chandler and Jared and, you know, Joel Lava and, you know, just all these freaks. You know, it's just so much fun. It was like, you know, these are all eras for me. And I don't want to let go of that. And so by reviewing that work, even though it was done so long ago, it allows me to kind of relive those memories a little bit too. So.
Oh, well, now you got me on your site scrolling down through all this stuff.
You're right.
It's awesome. So you've talked a little bit about kind of like what you want to do in moving into the future, right? We talked a little bit about like how like maybe you want to teach, maybe you want to like see how all this goes and just keep learning and pushing through all this stuff. Do you have a sense of like, you know, how this site will look in 10 more years?
Well, I think I'm, you know, to make money, I'm going to do commercial direction and design work, you know, to make a living. And, you know, I'm going to continue to try to release, you know, to release artworks to get into more of like, you know, to do the fine art world. It's so hard. It's so fucking hard, but I'm going to continue to make personal artwork that, maybe someday I can break into that world. You know, my good friend Michael China has been a big inspiration in that realm. That, you know, he started off as a graphic designer, started WeWork for them and YouWork for them with Mike Young, and then now has, you know, does a ton of beautiful, beautiful fine artwork, and has kind of been pushing in that direction, but also as a graphic designer and, you know, does all his design work for big brands. So he has both tracks going. And for me, it's like, you know, I'll do the commercial direction and the design work for clients. And then I'm just going to continue to make personal artwork using Maya and Arnold, which is just the most inspiring for me. It's because I'm learning, you know, there's so much to learn there. And, you know, coming from a design background, using that stuff, I definitely use it in a in a different way that, I'm, making a relationship with Solid Angle, the people who make Arnold. And I'm trying to just kind of, I want to be kind of like the Beeple of Arnold in a way. That's my goal, and you'll see over the next couple of months, I'll be releasing some print series using Arnold. And that's kind of, it's all very graphic design centric work, but that's something that I'm really passionate about doing on the side. And then also I want to get my work out to be larger. I want to do murals. I want to do, huge walls, printed walls of some of the artwork that I'm making, and, make it bigger. I want to design spaces. I want to take some of this, geometric stuff that I'm doing and design spaces with it. That's why, with my reps right now, Nexus and Tool, I'm really inspired that they have both an interactive and a live action department, because now they can pitch me for both of those kinds of jobs. So, both of those. And then, I'm just going to continue to write short films. So I have a short film called The Monkey King that I want to make at the end of next year. That's going to be kind of like a sequel to Monksterbait. It's going to be like a really expensive sequel to Monksterbait, which was the masturbating monkey on my website that I had for a while. It's actually still there. You just have to find it.
Yeah, you know what? I did find it today. Thanks for that. I was like, what happened to the site? Oh, got it. I'll leave that for everyone else to go find.
Monksterbait's still there, dude.
Yep.
So yeah, I want to make Monkey King next year, and I'll probably, I got to figure out how to pay for it. It's going to be about $150,000 to make this thing, and it's going to be really awesome. I'm really excited about it, and it kind of like, it's one of those things that I'm just, I'm going to make that no matter what. And so, next year that there'll be that. So I think, and then photography, I'm basically an amateur photographer, and I'll always be an amateur. I don't want to do like professional photography gigs, but I just want to, I want to really get into photography. But again, from a designer standpoint, so I want to, I'm going to buy a full spectrum camera, the end of this month. The camera that I'm a Fuji guy, so I have an X-T1, and the X-T1 IR is coming out, which is a full spectrum camera. And me and one of my DP friends has been teaching me a bunch about different filters and the Kokin series and infrared filters and all sorts of weird shit. And so I have a bag full of lenses and a camera, and I've just been shooting quite a bit, ever since July. It's just a new thing. And so I'm just trying to, learn as much as I can. And for me, I guess the most interesting part about that is the thrill of the shoot, to actually get yourself out into, the world to find these beautiful places to shoot, but then also the grading, the Lightroom aspect of it is really powerful and really inspiring. And something interesting happened where, the controls that you have in Lightroom, I'm actually grading my 3D renders in Lightroom now. Which I know is something that Beeple does. He uses this this Google grading thing that he does. So and for me, like I kind of do these things just to I kind of know what inspires me the most, and so I play to that. So for this photography thing, we're gonna release a site probably early next year called photo.gmonk.com, where it's just all the photography in a in a big ass grid that's going to scroll forever. And it's just, photos. And for me to have, I don't want to just throw them up on Flickr. I want to actually be able to curate that experience a little bit, and have it custom, and, probably no one will go there. But for me, it's just an inspiring thing to populate grids like that and to have control over the grids a little bit. And so, I'm going to make this site just to have, and it's year one, and probably 15 years from now, this site will probably have, 4,000 photos on it. And that's really inspiring to see how much I can improve, and maybe someday, just get really kick ass at it. Cause it's a really fun thing to do. And it's a fun thing to do with my girlfriend to travel and take pictures. It makes traveling really fun to have that creative outlet when you're not able to design or direct or do any of that stuff. So I'm just looking for things that, keep my juices going. So photography, learning these render engines, making that personal artwork, and then, all the personal short films and the commercial work to make a living, and it's a pretty good formula. And so that's kind of what I'm just going to kind of push forward with, and that might change next year, but I feel like I'm doing the right things to keep myself inspired. You know, it could be very easy to be 40 years old and to not be inspired, you know? And so I attach myself, like I was saying, I was attached myself to the people that are hustling. I attach myself to them and I hustle with them. And that's a really good thing. And it's a good way to kind of keep inspired, is to run with people that are really prolific.
Well, I think you just mentioned it there, you know, surrounding yourself with people that inspire you. And I guess I don't want to take up too much of your time. I'll ask you one more question if you have a minute. There's, you know, we try to teach people at the level that I find the most difficult, which is going from knowing you want to make something better and knowing you want to make something cool to actually learning the tools and the techniques on in the middle part on how to do that stuff. And I feel like so many people get kind of caught up in the middle ground where they don't even know how to ask the right questions. They don't even know, like, for example, you, like, probably photography may have had some silly questions at first, you know. Is there anything you could share with somebody that's, like, in the middle of knowing that they want to do something, whether it's filmmaking, illustration, 3D, you know, they're in the middle of this process, but they're like, not sure where to ask the right questions. Do you have anything that kind of help people get through that part of it?
You know, I think that a lot of people don't know what they like. And so I always say, like, you know, use reference and find the things that you love, that really get your heart, you know, singing. And so that for me back in the day, it was, you know, TDR and the Attic and Chris Cunningham just made my heart melt. I was just so inspired by it. And I was like, that's the kind of work I want to create. And I think that's step one, is you need to know what kind of work you want to create. Like, what is it that is inspiring you to sit down in a chair and stare at a glowing rectangle for, you know, 10 hours a day while you know, everyone else is out, you know, punching the time card and enjoying their lives. 'Cause it's a very, like, you know, it's, you know, you can chat with people and stuff, but it's a tough gig, man. You know, it's like, you can put so much of your energy into something, so much of your time and resources into something, and then nobody cares, you know, and that's just part of it. And you have to look past that too. You have to understand why you're doing it. You're not doing it to, if you do things with commitment and dedication and put everything you have into it, eventually it's going to pay off. Eventually. It might not right away, but you need to always understand, like, why are you doing this? So that's, I think, is step one, is just to be like, okay, this is going to be a really hard road, and I'm going to want to quit a lot. But you just, you know, only the freaks will survive, really, I think, you know, in this industry, because there's a lot of people that go half-assed, you know, all, you know, they go 50% in and they're not going to make it. You know, they're not going to be great. They could easily find a job and make a career out of it if that's what they want. But, you know, to really be great, you have to live and breathe that shit and know exactly what you want and be, you know, consume everything you can and learn as much as you can. You just have to live and breathe. You'll never know. You'll never stop learning if you're a freak. So that's step one. And then I think step two is just aligning yourself with the right people. So a lot of people get out of school and you know, they get into internships or jobs that have nothing to do with the things that they really want to do, you know. And I think that, you know, that I feel like that first step, like out of school or out of training and finding that first gig that, you know, is really useful to where they want to go, that's the tricky part, you know. And I think that boils down to, you know, how much talent you have, and how hard you work, you know, and then it's like, you know, putting yourself, you know, if you're in a small market, then you need to approach the best gigs in town and come up with a really unique way to approach them, because they get approached a lot by a lot of people. I remember, you know, back in the day when people were, you know, sending VHS tapes of their reels, you know, and seeing the piles of VHS tapes in the corner, you know, with all the tape on it, and how depressing that was. So I think, you know, you have to do things that really make you stand out, and, you know, use your resources in school to get the best possible training possible. Like I basically was at Humboldt State and made my own major. You could, cause a hippie school, you can kind of do whatever the hell you want. But, you know, I did all the graphic design classes. I did all the film classes. I did all the video classes from like the television department, the television and video classes. And then I did all the fine art classes. And so each one of those departments, you know, although it was from Humboldt State, which is not a great school, but, you know, just sucked as much as I could out of all my instructors and all the people I would go to school with, and was just like that guy. I was that kid that was like really weird and never showered and was just like sleeping at the lab all the time. I was just like that freak. I was like that little twit, you know, that was just like living in the computer labs in all the different departments, because I was just like, that's what I wanted to do. You know, I was just like that really weird. I was like that really weird kid, and didn't actually become normal until I lived in London a little bit, and even then I wasn't really that normal. So, you know, I just think that, you know, asking those right questions, I think there needs to be a motive first. You need to define that motive and know the kind of work that you want to do. And then you just set out and just be a maniac to achieve that. And I think now, you know, back in the day, I was, you know, there was no YouTube, you know, there were no tutorials. Whereas now you can learn pretty much anything you want, whenever you want. There's so many training courses. There's so many resources. So I feel like it's on the person to learn this stuff. Look at a perfect example is Raul Marx. Do you know who that is? I mean, you know, he's doing some of the most high end cinema 4D work, in the industry.
Stuff's and gorgeous.
It's just insane. And, you know, that guy, I just listened to, just listened to him being interviewed for the first time a couple of days ago, actually, and very humble guy, and sounds like mostly self-taught in a smaller market, but just used his resources to become, you know, an octane monster, and you know, with that skill, aligned himself with Patrick Clare, one of the, you know, great motion graphics. I don't know if you call it motion graphics, but one of the great directors in this day. And is just doing incredible work. And I think that there's a lot to learn from that. You know, look at Ash Thorpe, you know, living in San Diego and driving up to Los Angeles, driving to Venice Beach every day to work at Prologue. Every day he would drive from San Diego to Venice Beach to work at Prologue, because he's a fucking freak. You know, he's a total freak. And he was working with Danny Yount, and he's working with Ilya, and he's working with... Hold on, sorry, I just unplugged it. But he was driving up to Venice Beach every day to work with Danny Yount, to work with Ilya, to work with Kyle Cooper, to work with Henry Hobson, Paul Mitchell, like all the guys that were assembled at Prologue. He knew that was a goal, you know, that was an era, and he basically was in his car for fucking 5 hours a day.
Jeez.
To get that training, because he's a fucking maniac, you know, and look at him now, you know. And so I feel like... you know, for those people that really, really want it, I feel like there's enough opportunity to get it, to really get it.
And that was awesome.
Is that okay?
That was amazing.
So it's tough out there, kids. It's definitely tough out there, but you know, if you can make a career out of being creative, and learning, you know, I think that. And I was talking about this with my stepmom yesterday, actually, at dinner. It's so rewarding when you can continue to learn and express yourself and make a career out of it. It's probably one of the most rewarding, you know, things you can do in life, I think, is to the thing that you spend the most time doing to make a living and actually exist in this world, because you need money to exist in this world. You know, if you can do something that's rewarding. You know, a lot of people say that, hey, you know, I want to go work at Facebook to, you know, create apps that billions of people use every day and to influence their lives. And a lot of people work at nonprofits to, you know, help people or, you know, volunteer or do Big Brother programs or, so, you know, social working. And I feel like the creative industries and, you know, especially our industry is a little bit more of a kind of a more like individual selfish thing, because you're promoting brands, you know, to make a living that you don't 100% always care about. But the return that you get from it is the learning and improving and growing as an artist and as a creative. And some people need that. Some people have that gene where they need to express themselves and they need to learn and they need to create. And that's what makes them happy. And everyone has a thing that makes them happy, whether it's helping other people, you know, or it's learning or it's growing. And, you know, so I think that, you know, if you can make a career as a creative professional, it's a really rewarding thing. So not to say that being a, you know, successful motion graphics artist is better than working for a, you know, a nonprofit that actually helps people, but because that's a good career too. So I don't know. I'm not one to give career advice, clearly. But I mean, I think at my last point, you know, I think for me, you know, to that point, you know, I would love to end up being a teacher, you know, and I don't know when that'll be. But I do think that, you know, having a classroom of really young, really juiced, you know, kids, you know, that I can just kind of, you know, plant little fires in their brains and watch them, you know, kind of scurry off and create, I think would be probably, you know, one of the more rewarding things I can do. So that's kind of on the horizon, maybe in like 10 years. You know, I think I got enough hustle in me for another decade. And then I might go into like the teaching and start to give back a little bit. But, you know, it's things like this that are always really rewarding. So,
well, I'm sure I speak for a bunch of people out there that would love to see you teaching a course or just even talking more about this stuff. And
I'd love to do it in like Berlin or someplace freaky, you know.
Oh man, that'd be a blast.
So fun.
Well, yeah. I didn't want to take up too much of your time, Bradley. I really appreciate you coming by and talking about all this stuff. And it's just so interesting to hear everyone's story and how this happens and how people make all this stuff. So just thank you very much. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure, dude. It was great. Great to meet you, and love all the stuff that you do as well. So big fan.
That means a lot, man. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Thanks again for coming on, man.
All right, dude. And Nick, we're going to be in Chicago for the Forum conference. Are you going to be around?
I think so.
Cool.
Yeah, we can't wait. That's going to be a blast. That's coming up real soon.
Yeah, that's going to be a fucking awesome conference. So I'm really excited to meet you there.
Yeah, I hope to meet you there too.
All right, cool, man.
Thanks a lot, Bradley. I appreciate it.
All right, cool. Take care, Nick.
You too. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.